welcome to Irregular Climate, where we take a look at the irregular climate in our atmosphere and the irrational climate of global warming denialism. On this week's show, the most important news in the history of the universe, the simple reason why we should deal with environmental degradation, how CO2 controls the planet's temperature, a denier distraction, Michael Mann fights anti-science, the University of Virginia fights the Cuccinelli witch hunt, and the skeptic debunk of the week. I am Dan Mutal. Did you hear the news? It was such huge news that you must have heard it. It was such immense news that Anthony Watts, writing in the Christian Science Monitor, equated it to Martin Luther's 95 Theses, which led to the formation of the Protestant Church. So we are all agreed, the news was enormous, so big that it can't be overstated. But what was it? Are you ready? Maybe you should sit down. You see, the big news is that an old physicist with zero climate publications, who was a climate denier, is still a climate denier. Can you believe it? And that's not all. He announced that he was still a climate change denier in an air-filled open letter announcing his resignation to the American Physical Society. Apparently, modern climate science is just a massive conspiracy, and the American Physical Society is hopelessly corrupt. Big news, right? Nothing will ever be the same. Or, more accurately, everything will be exactly the same as it was. But it's fun to watch the deniers puff this up. So, what do we know about Hal Lewis, the man in question? Let's see. He states that he has been a member of the American Physical Society for 67 years. So, he's been around for a while, and maybe, just maybe, his mind isn't as sharp as it once was. But on to more important things, like his academic record. The first thing to notice is that his publication record on climate is non-existent. So, despite being a physicist, we have no idea how much knowledge he has of climate science. He probably has, or at least had, the capacity to learn and understand most, if not all, of climate science, but we have no idea if he has put the effort and time into doing so. So what do we know about his climate knowledge? Well, he did write a book entitled Technological Risk, published in the early 90s, and that book does talk about climate change, so that might be a good place to start. In it, he states that all models agree that the net effect will be a general and global warming of the Earth. They only disagree about how much. None suggest it will be a minor effect to be ignored while we go about our business. Can anything be done to slow it down? The only option in the long run is to decrease the amount of waste gases in the atmosphere. That would require global cooperation and sacrifice now to avert something far in the future. There is no evidence in human history that that is in the cards. But we can always hope. So, way back in the early 90s, when the case for anthropogenic global warming was not nearly as strong as it is today, Hal Lewis made it quite clear that global warming was real, caused by humans, and something we should deal with. He also noted the difficulty in addressing the problem. So far, so good. In fact, Lewis was one of the signatories of an open letter published in Nature last year calling for the American Physical Society to change its position on climate change and calling the journal Nature alarmist for accepting mainstream science. That's right, somewhere over the past 20 years, Lewis became a denier. But last year in the open letter, he was only one of many names and someone unknown to most. This time, he is alone, so the deniers are propping him up. So what else can we find out about Hal Lewis? His publication record seems very thin, and most of those papers are quite old, like from the 40s and 50s. In fact, by looking at the bio in his open letter, one sees that Hal Lewis was the chairman of all sorts of committees, boards, and panels. This leads me and several other people as well to conclude that Hal Lewis became more of an administrator than a scientist. And while there is absolutely nothing wrong with that, it does reduce the weight I will grant any of his scientific claims. So what are his scientific claims? Well, his letter is short on those, and most of them revolve around ClimateGate, the scandal that wasn't. So right off the bat, they are not particularly convincing. 5 separate inquiries looked into the leaked emails and cleared the scientists involved of any wrongdoing. There was no bad science, just overreactive deniers and an uncritical media that knows that controversy sells. For Hal Lewis to claim otherwise is irresponsible. To say otherwise without providing evidence is not only irresponsible, but dishonest and disgraceful. So what else does he have? Well, the biggest claim he makes seems to be that the trillions of dollars spent on climate research has somehow corrupted all of those involved, including the American Physical Society. My first thought when I read this was, trillions of dollars? Really? And lest anyone think that Lewis was just substituting the word trillion for a really big number, Lewis makes it quite clear that he literally means trillions of dollars by stating the global warming scam with the literally trillions of dollars driving it. So where are these trillions? Short answer is nowhere. The reality is they just don't exist. This should be obvious, right? I mean, the world total gross domestic product, the size of the global economy, is only $61 trillion. So at a minimum, assuming by trillions plural, Lewis meant 2 trillion, Lewis is suggesting that currently 3% of the total economic output of the entire planet is being devoted to climate research. That's obviously absurd. The amount of money spent on climate research is at least 500 times less than what Lewis claims. And the vast majority of that is spent on making and launching satellites, which is obscenely expensive, and also for supercomputers, not on scientists' salary. The average climate scientist survives on very modest pay. They don't have extravagant salaries. Science, unfortunately, just doesn't pay that well. And if we want to talk about the potential corrupting influence of money, why not look at a much larger source of money? For example, the total revenues from the production, transportation, refining, and consumption of raw fossil fuels is roughly $9 trillion, or nearly 3,000 times greater than what is spent on climate science. And those in the fossil fuel industry have at least a short-term profit motive to delay the implementation of policies that reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Now, does this fact alone mean that fossil fuel companies are using their vast wealth to delay action? No, of course not. Though there is other evidence that at least some of them are. No, what it does highlight is the absurdity of thinking that scientists are conducting a massive conspiracy in order to fool the rest of the world. And for what? To fight over a small pool of grant money that doesn't even end up in their own pockets? Give me a break. So, to sum up, over the past 20 years, as the evidence for global warming has become more and more compelling, and as the uncertainties shrink, Hal Lewis has become a contrarian. Well, if that wasn't enough for you, and it should be, but just in case it isn't, the American Physical Society has ripped Hal Lewis's points apart, publicly stating that there is no truth to Dr. Lewis's assertion that the American Physical Society's policy statements are driven by financial gain. They state that the APS governing body and the overwhelming majority of its members have absolutely nothing to do with climate. There is simply zero financial motive for the American Physical Society to go along with the climate conspiracy. If there was a climate conspiracy, the American Physical Society would not go along with it. They would debunk it. They also note that the science of global warming is quite clear and is agreed upon by virtually all reputable scientists. Bottom line, they totally reject Dr. Lewis's claims that global warming is a scam or pseudoscientific fraud. Hal Lewis may have done some good science, but that was a long time ago. He hasn't been a spring chicken for decades. I think David Appel sums it up best when he says, "I'm sure Dr. Lewis deserves some respect, but his opinion on climate science does not." A new report titled "Mainstreaming the Economics of Nature" arrives at the same conclusion as many other similar past reports. Mainly, that nature provides trillions of dollars in free services to the global economy every single year. Things like clean air and water, and even the oxygen we breathe, are all provided for free by nature. Nature even does us a huge favor by storing about half of our greenhouse gas emissions. If we were to do all these things for ourselves, it would cost us trillions of dollars. We can't really afford that price tag, but we act as if we can. We don't really value all that nature provides. We take it for granted, and we waste our environmental capital. And we show no signs of changing our ways. For example, the largest 3,000 companies in the world cost $2.2 trillion in unaccounted environmental costs. That's the equivalent of more than a third of their annual profits. Now, any true capitalist would demand that those companies pay for the damage they caused. Anything else is just a socialist government handout. The bottom line is simple. The reason we should deal with environmental degradation, be it climate change, biodiversity loss, or something else, is because the economic cost of ignoring it is far greater than the costs needed to fix it in the long run. It's simple economics. And that's without taking things like the morality of leaving future generations with a degraded, poorer planet into account. It really is that simple. So why is it so difficult for us to take action? How many times have you heard that water vapor accounts for the majority of the greenhouse effect in our atmosphere, and therefore CO2 cannot be responsible for the current warming trend? If you're anything like me, you have heard that particular denier talking point hundreds of times. And again, if you're anything like me, you've never been convinced by it. Why? Simple. Because the amount of water vapor in the atmosphere depends on the temperature of the atmosphere. Which means that if you add water vapor to the atmosphere, it will just rain out, causing no change in the total greenhouse effect. And if you remove water vapor from the atmosphere, the oceans will simply supply the atmosphere with more. So, while water vapor is a greenhouse gas, it isn't ultimately responsible for changes in the climate. So what is? Well, unsurprisingly, the answer is CO2. This is nothing new. It has been known for a very long time. But a study published in Science reaffirms the importance of CO2 in controlling Earth's temperature. The study, titled "Atmospheric CO2, Principal control knob governing Earth's temperature," begins like this. Ample physical evidence shows that carbon dioxide is the single most important climate-relevant greenhouse gas in the Earth's atmosphere. This is because CO2, like ozone, nitrous oxide, methane, and CFCs, does not condense and precipitate from the atmosphere at current climate temperature, whereas water vapor can and does. Non-condensing greenhouse gases, which account for 25% of the total terrestrial greenhouse effect, thus serve to provide the stable temperature structure that sustains the current levels of atmospheric water vapor and clouds via feedback processes that account for the remaining 75% of the greenhouse effect. Without the radiative forcing supplied by CO2 and the other non-condensing greenhouse gases, the terrestrial greenhouse would collapse, plunging the globe into an ice-bound Earth state. Okay, so what does all that mean? Basically, it means that CO2 is ultimately responsible for the Earth's temperature. Adding CO2 increases the greenhouse effect by a small amount. This causes warming, which means that the amount of water vapor in the atmosphere increases thanks to an ample supply in our oceans. This further increases the greenhouse effect, which causes even more warming, which causes even more water vapor in the atmosphere, which causes even more warming, and so on. The net effect is far more warming than CO2 could cause by itself. This is what scientists call a positive feedback. And it is this and other positive feedbacks that prompted Wallace Broker to write in the journal Nature way back in 1995 that the paleoclimate record shouts out to us that far from being self-stabilizing, the Earth's climate system is an ornery beast which overreacts to even small nudges. The lead author of this current study states quite clearly the implications of these results, saying, "Our climate modeling simulation should be viewed as an experiment in atmospheric physics, illustrating a cause and effect problem which allowed us to gain a better understanding of the working mechanics of the Earth's greenhouse effect, and enabled us to demonstrate the direct relationship that exists between rising atmospheric carbon dioxide and rising global temperature." The bottom line is that atmospheric carbon dioxide acts as a thermostat in regulating the temperature of the Earth. So, the next time someone tells you that water vapor accounts for the majority of the greenhouse effect in our atmosphere, tell them that that is exactly why we need to worry about carbon dioxide. You didn't think the deniers would just let the whole Wedgman plagiarism, bad scholarship stuff go uncontested, did you? Of course not. So, what have they come up with? More plagiarism. Or was that a copyright violation? Either way, since this time the plagiarism was done by a warmist, let's forget about all the bad stuff in the Wedgman report, and let's drop the George Mason University investigation of Edward Wedgman. So, what did they find? Well, Stephen McIntyre is charging that Raymond Bradley, the second author of the original hockey stick, and one of the people plagiarized by the Wedgman report, that he himself plagiarized, copied, or stole material from Harold Fritz's book, Tree Rings and Climate. McIntyre even provides several examples showing the original Fritz text compared with the Bradley text, and sure enough, they are almost word for word identical. Shocking, you say. How could he? This totally destroys every shred of evidence in support for global warming. Well, except for one small detail. Bradley actually cites Fritz. He gives Fritz credit. Okay, so this isn't plagiarism. But surely it must be copyright infringement. Well, I guess that's a possibility, but publishers usually clear this sort of thing up before publishing a book. And sure enough, there are 5 pages in Bradley's book dealing with all the copyright issues. So where does that leave us? Theft? Nope. That won't work, unless, of course, someone has evidence that Bradley broke into Fritz's office and stole some emails. Well, that didn't happen. Not this time, anyway. So where are we now? Well, we are at the exact same spot we were when we started. We haven't moved. The Wedgman report is still plagiarized trash. Edward Wedgman is still under investigation by George Mason University, and Bradley has done nothing wrong. And also, the hockey stick, which has been replicated over a dozen times, has yet to be broken. And none of this, even the hockey stick, has any real bearing on anthropogenic climate change. All this renewed attention on the hockey stick, mostly by Virginia Attorney General Ken Cuccinelli, but also by the Wegman controversy, has forced Michael Mann to respond to some of the more outlandish claims made against him. Remember, Michael Mann was the lead author of The Hockey Stick Graph. So he wrote an article that appeared in The Washington Post. In it, he states why he and all scientists have so much at stake in the upcoming U.S. midterm election. He explains that Representative Daryl Issa and Representative James Sensenbrenner have threatened that if the Republicans win a majority in the House, that they will launch what would be a hostile, politically motivated investigation of climate science. An investigation that mirrors what Ken Cuccinelli is doing right now to Michael Mann, and similar to the 2005 hearings that produced the discredited Wegman report. Mann correctly states the true danger of the problem, saying, "How can I assure young researchers in climate science that if they make a breakthrough in our understanding of how human activity is altering the climate, that they too will not be dragged through a show trial at a congressional hearing?" This is the long-term danger. Well, that and the threat of burying our heads in the sand as the world continues to warm. And ironically, this political interference with the scientific process is exactly what deniers claim to be afraid of. Except, of course, when the political interference comes from politicians in denial. But the story doesn't end here. Representative Joe Barton, who once stated that we can adapt to global warming by finding some shade, who apologized to BP because the U.S. government was holding them accountable for the Gulf oil spill, and was the man who decided to reject an offer from the National Research Council to do an impartial investigation into the hockey stick, and instead made a backroom deal with Wegman to produce a report that was guaranteed to arrive at the right conclusions. Anyway, that Joe Barton wrote an error-filled response to Mann's article. Thankfully, Mann, who is not someone who lets people misrepresent him, responded. But the Washington Post didn't publish it. Thankfully, Phil Plait did. Phil Plait's blog, Bad Astronomy, is a must-read, and his show on the Discovery Channel, Bad Universe, is well worth a watch. Mann states, "I recently wrote an essay arguing that politicians should stop attacking scientists. Representative Joe Barton's response was to write a letter attacking me yet again. He continues to misrepresent my research, insult my character, and spread misinformation about climate science. Tellingly, Barton calls my research in this area global warming projections, but such projections use models to predict future climate changes. They have nothing to do with the research Barton has attacked my colleagues and me for, which use real-world data to construct past climate change. After 6 years of these attacks, is it possible that Barton cannot even identify the nature of our work?" And that's not all. The author of the National Academy of Sciences report on the hockey stick, Gerald North, decided to pile on Barton and show just how wrong he was, stating that the conclusion of the National Academy of Sciences report he wrote, the report on the hockey stick, it concluded that Mann's hockey stick was correct, and that its result had been replicated numerous times. Barton, of course, came to the opposite conclusion. I hope by now it is abundantly clear that Barton simply could not be more wrong. Michael Mann is right. The political attacks on science must stop. Phil Plait sums it up by saying, "Congressman Barton, you are not fighting a political battle. You are fighting against reality itself. And if you win, we all lose." And finally, I have to give a massive amount of kudos to Michael Mann for publicly standing up for science and against anti-science. It cannot be easy for him to do so, but we are all better off because he does. Thank you. Thankfully, Michael Mann has had some help standing up to anti-science denialism. You might recall that Virginia Attorney General Ken Cuccinelli went after Mann, accusing him of defrauding taxpayers by misusing grants. You might also recall that some of Mann's fiercest critics, like Stephen McIntyre, stood up and defended Mann against Cuccinelli's witch hunt, and that a judge threw out Cuccinelli's case because it was way off base. Four of the five grants were not even under Cuccinelli's jurisdiction, and the judge noted that there was no evidence that Mann committed fraud. Of course, that wasn't enough to stop Cuccinelli, and he fired another lawsuit against Mann and appealed the original ruling. Well, the University of Virginia, which was Mann's employer a few years back and the target of Cuccinelli's lawsuit, isn't taking this lying down. They are actively fighting back against what they correctly call an unprecedented and improper governmental intrusion into ongoing scientific research, and that Cuccinelli is targeting Mann because he disagrees with his academic research regarding climate change. Now that's strong language for a court filing. Remember, it is deniers like Cuccinelli that claim that climate science has been corrupted by government influence. But when a denier like Cuccinelli interferes with the scientific process, it is perfectly acceptable. In other words, it's okay if a denier does it. That's the bulletproof logic being used by Cuccinelli and other deniers. Also ironic is a separate court filing where the University of Virginia asks the county court to put this case on hold while the Virginia Supreme Court resolves Cuccinelli's appeal. The university is arguing that putting the case on hold would save the court system time and resources because the case involves the same parties and the same arguments. The University of Virginia has already spent $350,000 fighting Cuccinelli's witch hunt. The university realizes what a waste of taxpayer dollars this investigation has become, which is ironic because one of Cuccinelli's stated goals for this case was to recover taxpayer dollars. But there is only one possible outcome here, even if Cuccinelli is ultimately successful, and that is a waste of taxpayer dollars. Lawsuits are expensive, and the grants in question weren't particularly large. It is ironic that Ken Cuccinelli, who is so opposed to increased government spending, can waste taxpayer money with an entirely gratuitous investigation.
A popular skeptic argument is that climate has changed naturally in the past, and therefore recent global warming must be natural. Of course, this argument is logically flawed. It's akin to saying forest fires have happened naturally in the past, so any forest fires that happen today must also be natural. But curiously enough, we don't see a swelling movement of arson deniers flourishing on the internet. Picking logical flaws in this argument is one thing, but where it gets really interesting is when you look at the science of past climate change. Believe it or not, scientists are aware that climate has changed in the past. In fact, the past gives us vital clues about how our planet responds to the various drivers of climate. We can see what happens when the Earth builds up heat, whether it be due to more sunlight or rising greenhouse gases. When heat builds up, of course, it gets warmer. But the crucial discovery from examining different periods throughout Earth's history is that positive feedbacks amplify the initial warming. This is why we see dramatic climate change in the past. Positive feedbacks take any temperature change caused by the sun or volcanoes or greenhouse gases and amplify them. Positive feedbacks are why our climate is so sensitive to greenhouse gases. So can you see the irony? Skeptics talk about past climate change as if it disproves the human influence on global warming. But the peer-reviewed science that examines past climate change actually comes to the opposite conclusion. Past climate change provides evidence for positive feedback that amplifies the warming caused by our CO2 emissions.
I'm sure all of you have noticed that I haven't been able to get the episodes out in a timely manner, to say nothing of the show notes. I'm sorry, but things don't look like they're going to get any better anytime soon, so I'm officially stating that Irregular Climate will have an irregular release schedules and fewer episodes per month. I don't like this. Frankly, it really sucks, but for now I see no alternative. I still hope to get 2 or 3 episodes out per month, just don't expect them with any regularity. The good news is, and yes, I'm really scratching the bottom of the barrel here, is that if you subscribe to the podcast rather than listen by visiting the website, you will get the episodes no matter when they are released. Again, I'm sorry and thank you for your continued support. That's it for this week's show. Show notes will be posted at irregularclimate.com. Eventually. Also at the website, there are plenty of RSS feeds for subscribing to the podcast. We are also available in the iTunes Music Store and the Zune Marketplace. We also have links to our Twitter and Facebook pages. Follow us and send us feedback. Tell us what we're doing well and what we need to work harder on. And if you feel so inclined and want to support the podcast, you can donate to Irregular Climate via PayPal. The links are all on the website. But if you are unable or unwilling to donate, please continue to download and listen. This in and of itself supports the show and helps it grow. I am Dan Mutal. You can follow me online at ofdan.ca, where you can see links to my blog, my Twitter feed, my Flickr feed, and my brand new photography website, Eye of Dan. Thanks, and until next week, try and stay regular.